Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Benchmark. My name is Matt Battle. I'm a program director here on the men's side. Welcome. We host this meeting, just a few announcements real quick. We host this meeting the second Saturday of every month. People in recovery are welcome to attend. Attendance will assist you in your departure after the meeting. Please follow the direction and keep in mind that we request all visitors be off property by 9:30 p.m. You can go to our website, www.benchmarkcenter.com, and get information about events that will be hosted here at the hall. Who's speaking next month? We know.
Audrey
will be speaking next month. Audrey C. From Denton, Texas. The one and only. We have a visitor's register located on the same table with the flyers back here. If you leave us your name and email address, we'll send you notifications and about upcoming events. Please remember that the first restroom down the hall is reserved for the ladies in attendance, and gentlemen will use the restroom at the end of the hall. I do ask that you turn off all your cell phones. And when we close the meeting, please stand at your chair for the prayer. Please help me welcome our resident chair person, Jake.
I'm Jake. I'm an alcoholic addict. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Saturday night open speaker meeting of Benchmark Recovery Center. My name is Jake, and this is not an AA or CA meeting, so the speaker may discuss other topics related to recovery. Please turn cell phones to the silent setting. Let us open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with what you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
And tonight I've asked Nate to read How It Works from Chapter 5 of the Big Book.
Hi, my name is Nate and I'm an addict.
Hey, Nate.
How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. As some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which were suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if He were sovereign.
And tonight, Marcia is going to introduce our speaker.
Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Marcia Stone, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, it's so good to be here tonight and see this room so full of smiling faces and happy families and happy residents. I hope you all are having a wonderful time at family visit. And it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. But before I do that, there's a very special person here tonight, and I would like to acknowledge him. And his name is Greg Roth. If Greg, can you stand up for just a second, please? Those of you that don't know, Greg is a very close friend of mine, and he was also one of the very first employees ever at Mark Houston Recovery, and was actually here when this whole place was created, when the idea came to be, and he was the director of operations when I was first hired here. He probably got me my job. I don't know that for sure. He's never admitted that, but Greg is largely responsible for the amazing culture that we have here at Benchmark Recovery, and this is the first time he's been able to be with us for a long time, and I just wanted to introduce him to you all and to tell him from the bottom of my heart how much I appreciate him and all his hard work and efforts here as an employee. So let's give Greg one more hand. Now on to the star of the show. Bubba Boyd. Bubba Boyd is one of my favorite people in Austin. We have an appointment every Monday night at 6 o'clock at Club 101 to see each other, to shake our hands, to hug each other's neck. And it's just been such a miracle to grow in my recovery as I've seen Bubba grow in his recovery. I was so excited when he agreed to come out here and speak. Our male residents get the pleasure of having Bubba come out here on Sundays and do some big book with them. And I think that if I asked them, they would probably attest to his charisma. And I could see lots of nods there. Bubba's very charismatic. He's very dedicated to the process of recovery. He helps a ton of men. And I'm telling you what, when I hear him share, you know, when the hair on the back of your neck stands up and you can absolutely hear the voice of God coming through someone, I get that experience a lot with Bubba. And I'm telling y'all, you're in for a real treat, and it's my pleasure to bring up Bubba Boyd.
Boy, I hope I lived up to that introduction. I'll tell you what, I come out here every other Sunday, and these are my boys over here, man, and I don't cut them no slack, because when I come out here, I feel like I'm on a life and death errand, man. I'm out here to serve God and try to help someone recreate your life with the power of God in your life, and I do this because, besides, I'm good at it. That's what I was taught to do as a result of working the steps and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a part of the growing in effectiveness and understanding of the God of the, that I'll never understand, right? To try to serve Him the best I can. It's really a pretty, it's kind of like I made the big show finally. You know what I'm saying? I really thought there'd be a few hundred more people here. I can sign autographs after the show if you want. No, I make a joke about that because the ego tells me that if this was about Bubba Boyd, we would be lined up and I'd be signing autographs when I left here today. But this really hadn't got a whole lot to do with me. I took just a little action, and I found and I tapped into some power that is elevating me to a level of existence that I never dreamed would exist for a guy like me. Now, in order, I like this jacket, and the truth of the matter is, and this is the first. Thank you. I bought this at Nordstrom's. It's Greg Ross' fault that I went there because I was going to Kohl's. You know what I'm saying? I thought Kohl's was a high class joint. From where I come from, it is a high class joint. I didn't buy the tie there, but it matches the jacket. The thing about it is, it's in order to, man, this feels good on me. And I feel good and I look good. And my dad would always say, he was an old cowboy, he said, son, if you look good, you feel good. And if you feel good, you ride good. So I always tried to dress the best I could. And the lineage that I come from, originally, Mark Houston says I got to wear this tie when I come up here with this jacket on. So I'm wearing my tie. So in case anybody comes from that lineage, you ain't got to doubt that I won't do what I said I'd do. It's crazy. In order for y'all to appreciate me up here feeling good about what I got on, what I'm wearing, you really got to understand where I came from. I like the way all these families look out here loving their kids, man, and it's awesome. My family don't look like this, man. And I don't come from I guess we're all look the same, but it comes in package a little different. You know, I'm not saying that my family don't love me as much as you love your children. And I'm not saying that their intention is more to try to teach me the right way to do things. I'm saying it looks different. You know, I mean, for where I come from, I'm, for lack of better terms, white trash comes to my mind. You know, I'm just an old country boy, an old redneck, an old guy I'm just a cowboy, man. And I was raised by a bunch of people, and my mom worked in a beer joint for, I don't guess she ever had another job. That's all I've ever known. I spent a lot of Saturday mornings cleaning the pool tables for 50 cents in free pool. You know what I'm saying? I was born and raised in a beer joint, and they all drank, and several of us went to the penitentiary. I really thought that that's just some people come from doctors and lawyers and all that stuff, and I just drawed bad. I thought that's just where I was. I mean, I didn't have any idea that I had the opportunities everybody else had. I thought I was just going to be that guy. I remember when I was a kid that I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. And look, but I couldn't catch, I couldn't bat, I couldn't throw. Man, but it looked like a good idea to me, man. I mean, it looked pretty good to me. You understand? I wanted to be that guy, but I couldn't do that. I couldn't pull that off. And so I decided that I played football one time. I played a lot of sports. I played a lot of sports when I was younger because it made my parents proud of me. Does that make any sense to anybody? I really needed, at a young age, man, you could have gave me heroin when I was 6 years old. It would have been better off and give me some acceptance, man. Because I've been trying to get accepted by my family and by my peers my whole life, and it's about killing me. It's about killing me. The thing about it is, I thought that I was raised by good folks. And I assume that there are. I mean, they meant well. And they love me to this day, but I'm the only sober member of my family right now. Matter of fact, I'm the first person in my mom's side of the family that ever graduated high school. Right? I got two sisters on my dad's side. They went to UT and got masters. One got a PhD, so I really think I'm like a hybrid idiot or something. I got the best of both worlds, you know what I'm saying? I don't know what's going on with all this, but I got a little bit of that and a whole lot of this, you know what I'm saying? So I'm an intellectual giant sometimes and an idiot other times. What I'm trying to give you a picture of is when I was younger, I needed to be okay, and I needed my mom and my dad and my sister. I wasn't supposed to be around. Your parents had me when they were 40 years old, and I think I was an accident, but they swore I wasn't, you know. I think maybe after a few years of methamphetamine, they were thinking, well, this is an accident. We didn't mean to have it. Oh, by the way, my name is Bubba Boyd, and I'm a recovered crystal meth addict. And my sobriety date's May the 12th, 2008. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. It's really pretty cool to be up here because the man that carried the message to me for the very first time is sitting right here with me. He holds a special place in my heart. He didn't cut me no slack. He disturbed me about alcoholism. Got my feet moving. My new sponsor is here with me now. I kind of call them both. I mean, this is my mentor and this is my sponsor, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm never going to have but one mentor. You know what I'm saying? So I was born in Pflugerville, Texas. And I grew up, like I said, around a bunch of drunks, a bunch of convicts. And And they did the best they could, and they loved me the best they could, and they taught me a lot of cool stuff. And my dad, by the way, is a cowboy like me. And he's in the Hall of Fame, Texas Rodeo Cowboy Hall of Fame, and he was a cowboy, and I wanted to be a cowboy, and I wanted to be like my dad. So I went on, and I started doing cowboy stuff. I started riding steers when I was real young, and I really didn't want it. I wanted to try it, but then after I saw a look on my dad's face after I tried it, I had to do it again. And then lo and behold, they started saying like, man, you're a natural. You got talent. Man, you're going to be one of the greatest. And all this evolved into, man, nobody wants to ride bulls for a living. And by the way, I never really made a living. I just say I made a living. I went to a bunch of rodeos and I paid a lot of people's bills, but I was trying to make a living. You know, you don't really make a living riding bulls. You just say you do so people think you're cool. I needed to be okay. You know what I'm getting at? I needed my dad to love me. I needed to be the hero. I needed to be in the spotlight all the time. And I remember I was doing this in high school, and I couldn't play sports, and I wanted to play sports, but I was a bull rider. You know what I'm saying? I was good at it, so that's what I did. I won a lot of money in high school. I went a lot of places. I've been around some special people in the rodeo business, right? And they called me by my first name. Man, I thought I had arrived. Man, like it meant something for Bobby DelVecchio to know my name and Donnie Gay to shake my hand and Wasey Cathy to call me his friend. It meant something to me, right? But it really didn't. It didn't help me in the long run. I never really got to a place where I was okay with just being who I was. I needed these people to shake my hand in front of everybody. I'm bondage to this crap my whole life, man. I'm slave to it. I'm slave to recognition. I'm slave to attention. I'm slave to acceptance. It owns me. I'm not happy. The problem is I'm not happy with who I am. I need you to validate who I am. I need that in my life. And the problem is I still need it today. So I get to stand behind this podium and tell you what my problem is. My problem is I suffer from alcoholism. In order for me to understand what alcoholism is, to say I'm a drug alcoholic, I got to understand what that means. I always knew. I remember the very first time I did some methamphetamine, my sister, she was a dope, took me into prison three times, blah, 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 all that good stuff. Right? And I remember thinking to myself, the very first time I snorted a line of that methamphetamine, back in the day, they had some methamphetamine back in the day. But y'all are getting today, you know, I'm not that good, you know what I'm saying? Methamphetamine back in the day. I remember thinking one thing. I remember asking my cousin who chopped out that line of that stuff to smell like, it kind of smelled like Parmesan cheese. Dirty stuff. I remember that when I did that, besides it burning real bad and me gagging a little bit, I remember that sensation hit me, and I remember thinking to myself, how long does this last and are we going to run out? I should have known right then it's going to be a problem. This might be a problem for a guy like me. And first time ever, we got enough to last. What can I do to make this last longer? Right? Because it did something for me. In that moment, I want you for nothing, I need you for nothing. I was whole. Right? It's like a good certain amount of. I know there's probably some normal drinkers in here. I don't think anybody shoots methamphetamine normally, so I'm not going to give y'all that one. But there's some people in here that can drink a few glasses of wine and say, man, this is just right. This is right where I need to be, and they can stop drinking wine. And you can understand that's how I need to feel all the time. And I remember that was an issue for a while, right? And I could rein her back in. And I went to college and we drank a lot of beer and did all that stuff that college people do. And then I'd come home on the weekends and I'd do a little methamphetamine. And I kept it a secret from the people in college. I didn't want them to think bad of me, right? Because drug addicts, y'all know what y'all think drug addicts look like, right? You don't look like this, right? We don't look like this, right? The problem is I still think I look like a drug addict today. Somewhere deep inside of me, I know what I am. I know that once I take the first one, all bets are off. All bets are off, and there's no stopping me. And I don't know where it's going to take me. And at that point, I really don't care. You understand? The problem is not stopping, because somebody's going to stop me. Because I'm going to run out of money. I'm going to run out of things to steal. I'm going to get some handcuffs on me, whatever I'm going to do, right? I'm not going to go very long before the resources run out and I'm removed from the alcohol and the methamphetamine. The problem is, and after a couple of days, I get to feeling pretty good. The problem is I can't stay stopped long enough to put anything together that's sustainable, right? Most all of my life, I've been able to tear some stuff down. Caught myself there. And build it back up, right? I'm talking about y'all. I set fire to life, to lifelong dreams that people that work all their life and don't have. I set fire to it, man. To my life. Careers. Man, the first time I tried to get sober, I got sober for this girl, man. I'm talking about, woo, she was pretty. I mean, I'm talking about Jennifer Aniston pretty. I'm talking about... I thought that if I could just get off that mess, I mean, the problem is she chased me everywhere. I would go to the store and I wouldn't come home for a week. I thought I was road hunting. I didn't even have on a rifle. You know what I'm saying? I get stuck somewhere for 6 or 7 days and she's calling me, begging me to come back, and I can't come back. My parents, she's called the army, and the next thing you know, man, I come home and she loves me back to health, and then we're off to the races again. I went to this treatment center and when I got out, she was gone anyway. And for about 6 months, I pulled it together and I paid her bills. I thought I could buy her back. You know what I'm saying? I really needed to have this girl to be okay. I mean, she was a good enough... You walk in a room with her, man, you arrived. You know what I'm saying? I needed that woman in my life to be okay. And the problem is that it's just never... I never was able to really put anything together. I mean, I could rebuild some stuff. I mean, I have a lot of energy, but... And almost the book talks about almost every other area of my life with respect to alcohol and drugs, I can pull some stuff together. I can make some stuff happen. You know, right up until... And then that worked right up until it didn't work. I mean, you know how hard you just got to fight? Man, I just get tired of rebuilding stuff. And so I just give up. Or I get tired of trying to hang on to something I think I need to be okay. And I do all I can to hang on to where I think I need to be okay until it just don't matter. I just don't matter anymore. Or I change my mind. Maybe I don't need that to be okay, right? Or I do crazy stuff like I start going to church every Sunday, every Wednesday, and singles night on Friday. Hey, I went to I got a divorce one time, and I decided I was, because I always believed, right, and I always had faith, right, that something was going on there, and I wanted some of it. Right, I could be happy for about an hour and a half. And I was drunk at halftime on Sunday after service. Right? And I went for 90 days straight, man, and then she divorced me anyway. Right? I could not figure out what was really going on with why that for a moment I could have something and for an eternity I wouldn't have anything. Why I felt separate from one? Why I felt like I had to impress somebody? Why I had to be doing something special to be okay? Why I had to look a certain way? I've been confused my whole life, man, behind what you think of me. And that's crazy, man. I never could just be Bubba, man. My sponsor today said, man, you're the best Bubba boy that I know. I think he's patronizing me. There ain't but one of us, right? But man, but sometimes that's about as best I can do, man, with my own power. But I made a bunch of mistakes, and I don't think all the war stories are necessary. I'm just telling you that when I start drinking, I can't stop, and when I stop drinking, I can't stay stopped. And I don't care how much my mama loved me. My mother's telling me, please stop, while she's drinking cold beer. My sister's saying, please stop. Can you give me this guy's phone number? They didn't mean me no harm. Their intentions were good, man. My dad, this is where we're going with this family stuff, man, because I got some part of my life that today I carry with me everywhere I go. My dad loved me so much that I called him by his first name, and he called me by my first name. That was a deal we made. We decided when he was about 12 years old, he said, we're going to be best friends, we're going to be pals, we're going to be partners. I'll call you Bubba and you call me Muscles. I come from some outlaws, I'm telling you. Hey, this dude weighed 130 pounds, soaking wet, rode bulls and rode racehorses all his life, and his nickname was Muscle. You tell me, I don't know. You see what I'm saying? I'm not unique, but he might have been. I don't know. And he told me that we'd be best friends, and I could call him by his name, and I could tell him anything, and all I had to do was just always tell the truth. And he told me things like, man, the truth, you never have to remember the truth. The truth's always the truth, and tell the truth no matter what, and don't do this no matter what. And a coward dies 1,000 deaths, and brave man dies once, and all you got to do is just boom, boom, boom. And man, I thought, drinking more black velvet muscles would be all right. I don't want to hear all that. You know, oh yeah, it all sounded good, man. What I really wanted to do was pay my entry fees and leave me alone. And I would fail. It got to the point where I would fail one miserable time after another. And I'd go right to Muscle's house. And every single time he opened the door and let me in. He never shut the door on me. I don't get... It's pretty obvious that the families that are here hadn't shut the door on any of these kids yet either. I wish he'd have shut the door on me. I wish at some point in his life he would have loved me enough to say, I'm done with you. But he couldn't do it, man. He couldn't pull it off, man. I'm talking about, he thought the sun set in my, whatever. You know what I'm saying? He thought that the sun rose and set in me. He treated me, you know, he worshipped me and I worshipped him. I've never loved and probably will never love any man as much as I love my dad. Any human man, you know. And it about killed me. He loved me so much, it about killed me. I stopped by the cemetery today. This is a big moment for a guy like me. To come here and tell my story and carry his message. I'm by the cemetery and I got on my knees and I did a little prayer and meditation with my dad. And I invited little Muscles to join me in this journey. To tell y'all about how two cowboys went down that road together. And one of them almost didn't make it. And the other one had to die so I couldn't make it. I remember one time my dad, he got lung cancer and he died on me about seven years ago. And I remember I was at this ranch where I sequestered myself. He said, oh, I can't. Well, we had some friends and he sent me to this place where he thought I could get off the dope. Right? It's okay to drink beer. So we went up there and I'm sitting around a campfire after we fed bucking bulls and I'm drinking cold beer and I'm trying to think how I'm going to tell my dad everything's going to be all right. How I'm going to make my peace with my father before he dies, right? And this guy that I live with, he said, well, you better think long and hard before you make that promise, man. You can't go back on it. You go back on this promise, man, you ain't never going to make it. How many times have I said I promise and then I'm in it? How many promises have you made your family? And man, I guarantee you, you could take a lie detector test in that moment and you'd have passed it. Because you meant it. I meant it. I meant it when I looked him in the eye, in that bed, and he's dying, and I'm crying. I'm saying, man, Muscle, I got to tell you something. And he looks at me, and he can't look at me, right? I'm talking about two men who loved each other. He's crying, and I'm crying, and I'm trying to get the words out. I promise you, I'm done. I ain't never going to do that stuff again. And he lied to me. I said, he lied to me. He said, I'll believe you this time, son. Now I can die in peace. He lied to me. Somewhere deep down in that man, he had enough experience with old big bad Bubba Boyd. He knew I couldn't pull that crap off. But in order for me to be okay, he knew he had to tell me the lie. See, I look back at that today and I know that he knew I couldn't get her done. So after a series of mistakes, about on January the 12th, on the anniversary of my dad's death, I was released from the Texas Department of Correction. 1 year to the day after his death. You know, I mean, I'm at January 12th. That date sounds familiar to me. January 12th, I think that's, oh my God. Then I remember that promise. I remember those tears. I remember that pain. And I said, all right, I got one more shot at this deal. One more shot. I knew it was the time. Now was the time. And I remember being 10 months sober, sitting in my sister's apartment, sleeping on a... I ain't slept on a mattress in 12 months. They don't have mattresses in TDCs or pillows, either one. And I remember going, man, I remember feeling so sorry for myself. Having repaid my debt to society, I'm thinking, right? Poor, pitiful me. This is what you get when you go to prison and get out and try to do the right thing. Ain't got no job, ain't got nothing. Man, this ain't right. This ain't fair, man. God, what's a guy got to do to get a break? Right? Praying. I remember walking. I was going to walk to this church because they had church in TDC or state jail, and it's not really like church. It's just that place where they go and whatever, sing some songs. And I remember I was walking to a church. I wasn't far from a church called the Promised Land. I thought, well, it ain't very far. I've walked a lot further than that for a lot less. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, I'm just going to give this Promised Land. Because the Promised Land had a ministry at the prison. And I thought, well, I like that one guy. He would talk so fast. For every something or another, he could say a Bible scripture. He'd just spit this stuff out. I thought, man, that dude's cool, man. I'm going to go get some of that. And I walked about halfway there and then. I got tired. And when I woke up, I was in another parking lot of another church. So I went in that church instead. And I ain't never been to the Promised Land. I ain't never been. I found the Promised Land when I walked in that church. I found some people in there that I recognized. One of them I had actually been locked up with. And for some reason I started going to these meetings at this church. And these recovery type meetings. And it still didn't feel right. I felt good again. I felt good again on Sunday. But I still just didn't feel good, man. I just wasn't happy. Something wasn't right. I'm still not feeling good about who I am today, right? I really don't have very many clothes because all that stuff. I don't have a whole lot going on, and I'm still feeling pretty selfish. I'm self-pity. I'm just consumed with about the way I feel. And somehow I lucked out and got this job, man. And I decided, see, all this stuff I'm confused about because I'm really not one of the guys that makes any decisions like this for myself. I don't know where the maybe the Holy Spirit, maybe God's saying you need to do. Maybe I'm being guided, right? I don't think that on my own power I ever made any decision that really would benefit me up until this stage in my life. God must have known I needed something, right? And I made a few decisions, and I got this job, and I said the first paycheck I get, I'm moving into the sober house that the church is sponsoring, right? I'm thinking that they have to go to AA meetings there. I'm thinking I just need some structure, right? I'm thinking this time I'm going to get to this place. I'm going to do every single thing they tell me this time, and I'm going to get a sponsor, and I'm going to boom, boom, boom. And man, what I got to lose, man? I'm not doing very good. I don't even care anymore what it looks like. I just need to be. Oh man, I'm just not doing good, and I'm fixing to go whence I came, man. I'm fixing to go back. I'm fixing not to be able to keep that promise again. And it's going. I remember him saying, "You're going to die if you break that promise." And I ain't trying to die. People that really want to die, they're in the cemetery. Right? I want to live. Somehow I want to live, but I want to live free, man. I need some freedom behind some serious conflicts going on in my spirit, man. I need some freedom behind some of this stuff. And so I get this, and then this guy goes, "You ain't got to pay me right now." He said, "Wait till you get your first." No, I'm not moving in until I got my first week's rent. I'm doing this right. Anything you give me, I'm taking most of the time, right? I'm paying my way this time. I don't care if it costs me everything I make. I'm making $12 an hour. And I move in there and I go, "Well, so where's the meeting cards and where's this and that and the other?" And, "Oh, well, no, you don't have to go to a meeting, but you know, we need to go to church and we need to do this." And I said, "Well, no, man, I need to go to a meeting." And they said, "Well, Club 101 is right down the street." And I'm like, "Well, I used to go to Club 101 back in the day, right? 10, 11 years ago when Jennifer Aniston left me. You know what I'm saying?" I went to this place, right? I went to this place and I said some pretty cool stuff. I memorized a few phrases out of the big book and I got a bunch of handshakes and a bunch of high fives and a bunch of attaboys. About every 30 days, I got a newcomer chip. I had enough newcomer key tags to make a belt. But they got a newcomer write a tag. They're all, I got one. Then you order tags. I got a bunch of them. I wasn't hearing what you were saying. I really thought you could go to meetings for long enough. You could just go. And after you've been going to meetings long enough, it got easier to just not drink just today. Don't buy that crap. It don't work. It works right up until it don't. Until you find a crack pipe in your mouth or a needle in your arm, and then you're wondering where you're at. I remember going, I'm going to go to this meeting, so I catch the bus. No, a roommate had a car. I don't remember. I just dropped me off down there. I stumbled into a hornet's nest, a big bug thumper. I ain't trying to pick that dude, man, for my sponsor, man. I said a few, I don't know what I even said. Whatever it was, he said, you must be a crystal meth addict. I don't look like one today. I mean, really? If I don't smile, I can't see my teeth, would be okay. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to ask this guy to, maybe we can talk after the meeting. I'm still not really wanting to sponsor. I'm just thinking maybe we could discuss a few things. See, my ego is starting to rebuild. At that moment, my ego is starting to rebuild itself. I don't need AA. I just need to come to you. You know, I'm recognized all of a sudden. I recognize a few faces, and I kind of get a warm, fuzzy feeling, a little three-finger handy dandy. I'm doing pretty good, you know. And I asked him. I said, I didn't say will you be my sponsor. I said, do you think maybe we could meet for coffee? I don't even drink coffee. You know what I'm saying? You know, smoke cigarettes and, you know, talk trash. That's what I do best. And he said, yeah. But I asked him. He said, well. He asked me a few questions, you know. Thank God for good sponsorship, you know. He asked me a few questions, and I said, well, you know, I go to church every Sunday, and I'm thinking, you know, Jesus saves. And by the way, Jesus does save. And he said, look, your salvation's between you and your church. I'm trying to offer you an active participation in the recreation of your life with the power of God. Those were his exact words. Ooh. That sounded like fun to me. I get to be a part of this along with God, right? Faith without works is dead, right? I'm going to do something and something's going to happen. I'm going to be the motivator. I'm going to be the one that takes the action for this to take place. Because without my action, I'm just going to sit on the couch miserable wondering why life treats me so bad. And wondering what else I got to do to impress you for me to be okay today. Right? I'm going to be in bondage to that crap again. And it's going to own me. And it owns me. And I'm a slave to it. And I ain't trying to live life like that no more, man. And so we met a few times, and he gave me a fatal dose of alcoholism. Woo! Fatal. He was almost a fatality, not me. I used to clam my hand down, and I'd say, hey, man. I thought we were going to talk about the big book, man. Are you trying to offend me? He says, sit down, Mo. Hey, we're in the... What's that place? Epoch? Went to a fancy coffee shop. Right? Not Starbucks. Not $5, but Epoch. You know what I'm saying? And he says, sit back down here, man. I'm just turning a few statements into questions. Anybody ever had anybody turn a statement into a question? Disturb you a little bit? And I was really had a problem with the power of choice. I thought I was choosing. The second step. But once I had an experience with my default position in life and accepted that on my own power, that's the best I'll ever do, I did a third step prayer and I started doing a few simple things. Met a few simple requirements with a certain simple attitude toward the work in front of me. And some stuff started to change. I started going to church on Sunday and he was there. I started going out in public and he was there. I started going everywhere I went, and I started to wake up, slowly wake up. I started to realize a few things about what's really going on in this world and how much of it has to do with what I think and how I feel and how much what I can get from life instead of put into life, right? I started to wake up. I started doing some writing. I started doing them nightly reviews out of the big book. By the way, my soldier. I'm reading the big book at night. Sorry, Marcia. Right, answering those questions, man, and being honest with yourself and with your God. right? And setting aside a few things they think they might know about this program and these things that are happening in your life and how much of it's your business, how much of it's not, and where the balance is at, and how do you stay in the middle of the circle and the triangle, and how do you make use of what religion... Because, by the way, religious people are right. And how do I make use of what they have to offer? And what fits me and what fits you and what's my... And I started having some experience with this work. Man, I ain't never looked back. Man. There's been times in my life that I feel like God has set me on fire and the world can just watch me burn. Man, I'm talking about moments like that. For a guy like me, you got to be kidding me. See, what I really wanted to do was just not drink and just not shoot dope. I just wanted to stop that. That's the miracle that I wanted. I just want to not do that. I just want to not lie to my dad anymore. I just want to live up to the promise I made. I just want to not break that promise again. I just don't want to die from breaking a promise. I just want to live up to something. Man, I tell you. I've had some experiences with God. See, I realize that I heard Mark Houston say it one time, and he said, man, believing in God and having an experience with God, that's two different things, cowboy. I believed in Jesus my whole life. I never saw His face. I saw Him in other people's face, or what I thought was God or Jesus, but I didn't feel that way. What I've come to discover is you ain't got to be a dope fiend to find Jesus Christ. You ain't got to be a dope fiend to find God. It just helped for me to be one to find God. That's just what it had to take. There's a lot of people in this world got a lot more things going on than I do with God. And they ain't never shot a cc of methamphetamines in their life. But if you're that guy that can't keep a needle out of your arm, you might want to try this 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outline, precise clear-cut directions, as outlined in this book with a sponsor. And you won't have to break no more promises either. I'm just going to say that I've been some special places, and I got belt buckles to prove it. You understand? Yeah, I got it on with my tie, Greg. I used to wear this belt buckle to play golf, and my sponsor, he said, you can't wear that to play golf, man. Have you worn this thing? You wear it with your pajamas on. You know what I'm saying? I've done a lot of things. I've been able to be a part of a lot of things all throughout my life, man. But working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and having a spiritual experience as a result of these steps has been the greatest single event that's ever taken place in my entire life. Bar none. You know, I had an experience today. This is how God shows up in your life today. This is current. This was this morning. I shared with a couple of people already that... See, ain't this funny how I rehearsed this for a month, man. And it didn't sound nothing like I rehearsed. I really thought I was going to write. See, my friend Charlie, he said, you PowerPoint, write some things down. All I got written down is watch your mouth and don't cut. I can't do it. Hey, look, if you come to the AA meeting, man, I'd love to bring the heat, but there'll be a little bit of some of that in here with you. But you know, I did have Mark Houston said one thing to me one time. He said, what makes you think that the message that God has for you has needs any attitudes to come out of your mouth to have any power? Right? Just with passion is why. Passion is how I've been. I've been passionate for a lot of crap in my life. I've been passionate about lots of things, but none of those things sustain me, man. But this relationship that I found with my Creator that solved all my problems. I don't mean just part of my problems. I mean all my problems. My money problems, my sex problems, my life problems. If I use the tools that I've been given, I don't have any problems. All I got right now, and I don't think I got a whole lot going on right now that looks like a problem. My health's not in danger. I mean, man, this has just been one experience after another to confirm that this relationship is the most important thing in my life. I heard somebody say it last week, man, if you put God first in your life, all the things that come second are going to be first class, cowboy. And I mean, that's the truth. That's been my experience. I had an experience today with my daughter. I got a 19-year-old daughter. God bless her. You know what I'm saying? She's a good looker too, boy. I got some pictures on my phone if y'all want to see her after this. Hey, Ooh, I'm talking about a hottie. Right? She looks like her daddy, they say. I don't know. My sister called her Bubba. I don't know, man. I ain't that good looking, but I'll take credit for that one, I guarantee you. She called me. She was going to come here, right, to hear me talk tonight, because I've discovered after almost 5 years, this is why I do what I do. It was just to not drink for a long time. Now I do what I do because God makes all things possible. You understand? She wasn't going to be able to make it today. She was going to come, and I was excited, right? I need a few more accountability partners to keep my mouth from running off at the cuss word. So I was going to bring her in here, and I got my pastor in here with me tonight. Pastor Rick, most godly man I know, is here with me tonight. And I said, her mother called me, my ex-wife, and I thought she was going to come. Ooh, that's all right, the daughter cool, but the ex-wife, I don't know about all that. She might not agree with a whole lot I have to say, you know what I'm saying? She thought it was all about Bubba, it was all about Bubba. I thought it was all about her. It's always somebody else's fault. Now, you know, it's always somebody else's fault, right, guys? There's my boy over there. Is your parents here tonight? I still got my foot on your neck, don't I? You ain't getting away from me, cowboy. I think that she says your daughter is upset. And I thought, oh, what is she upset about? Well, she's got this test and she's trying to get into nursing school and you got to make an A in this class. You can't do this and blah, blah, blah. And she's crying because she's afraid she's going to disappoint you. You got to be kidding me. All I've ever done my whole life, is disappoint her. And now that child is worried about disappointing her daddy? And what do? You just be a good parent. And I say, don't ever worry about what your daddy thinks. You don't want to be a slave to that crap. It'll kill you. You're going to get drunk. You're going to shoot. Don't think like that. No, I mean, really, you say, man, that's the power. That's a strange twist of how things get rebuilt in my life, right? From just a little bit of action that I take to seek this power, to seek God. And it's not necessary that I find God every day, but I better be seeking Him. It's the act of. Right? So when He does show up, I'm aware of it. And then I get to share that with somebody else, and I get to have this experience with my Creator that's undeniable and it's tangible. You can't ever tell me that I'm just acting on faith. I've seen God's face. I get to see it whenever I wake up, if I want to wake up. Boy, now I'm just going to tell you all this. Being awake is not always what it's cracked up to be either. I get pretty uncomfortable sometimes. The heightened awareness brings about growth and the willingness to lay aside what I think I've learned this last year so I can learn something new today. All those things are uncomfortable for me, but it's really not. I just want it to be okay. I just want to coast. Anybody ever just want to coast you live? But I say being in recovery is like riding a bicycle uphill. You better keep pedaling. Unless you're an acrobat, you're in trouble if you stop pedaling. I don't have enough time to stop pedaling that bicycle, man. I got to keep on it. I got to keep working. And I know I get a little pumped up. I go on these little tangents, and I don't even know what I've said. I know that you got to keep working at it. It's work in progress. I sometimes wish that I would just arrive and it'd be all good. But every day I get to learn something new about who I really am and what my default position is. But I know that since I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined in the book with a sponsor, and I do ask myself the question, what have I done to demonstrate that I want to live free today? Freedom has showed up. Freedom has showed up in a big way. I'm probably a better Alcoholics Anonymous member as I am a member of society. Because a lot of people that I'm around on a daily basis aren't working the spiritual program of action, and I have learned to come to terms with that's got to be okay too. And they don't have to know who I am for me to get along with them. And it's been taking a lot of work and a lot of inventory. I'm not afraid to write inventory. I think my sponsors are kind of afraid to listen to it sometimes. Because I've been taught in column two to bring it hard, and if I got to stand up and slam my hands on the table and bring it hard, I bring it hard, cowboy. I need freedom behind what's enslaved me. If I could say anything to anybody in here, the families and the clients, man. You ain't got a whole lot to lose, man. But you got everything to gain by doing this deal, 100%. And the parents, read this book. Katie told me to tell you to read this book. Learn something about this disease, because if not, it's quite possible that you might contribute to the death of your children. If you don't learn something about this disease, all you're doing is putting fire, gas on the fire. And you guys that are in here, men and women alike, get armed with the facts about yourself and get out there on the firing lines with some of us guys, man. Get out there in the trenches, see? There's a lot of people that do a lot of things for the goodness of God on this creation. I know they are. I've got people in my church that go to different countries and ministries. And they do all kind of crazy stuff. And they got more faith than I do. I know they do, man. Right? I'm not perfect. I promise you I'm not. If I was perfect, I'd be walking on water somewhere. But I do. They do a lot of things. But to see, I've discovered through this whole deal that I'm an imperfect part of God's perfect plan. And this is my mission field right here. I belong in AA. I'm empowered by God. Empowered by God. To play a part in the recreation of others' lives. To carry the message of hope. That you can too recover. I never say I'm in recovery. That's a joke. If Ed said you're going to be in recovery the rest of your life, I'd have quit first day. He said the first promise in the big book is how many thousand people have recovered from alcoholism. And I don't know what recovered looks like. I don't drive a fancy car. I don't drive a Hummer. I don't drive a Mercedes Benz. But I damn sure know what recovery feels like. And I know what it feels like to transmit the power of God through me putting myself in that position to be of maximum service to Him and to all the people in this room. And that's freedom. And that's wholeness. I've been seeking God my whole life, didn't know it. Seeking God my whole life, didn't know it. Anything I could put in me or around me or on me to make me feel whole, that's what I've been doing. And I ain't got to do a whole lot now to just wake up and I know He's there. Just wake up and know He's there. And that if I got $1 million problem, my God's got $1 million solution. And I got a lot of problems in the world today, people, and money just ain't one of them. I got cowboy boots that cost more than my car. I mean, for a guy like me, they can't do anything but steal. That's a pretty cool promise right there. I don't promise you that in the big book, but I'm telling you, that's kind of stuff can happen to you. I just want to say how much of an honor it was to get to come up here and share just a little bit of what it's like to be a crystal meth addict who's been reborn and recreated and still willing to change. And I'm still willing to get out there in the trenches and go to war where I belong and be used by the Most High God to help save lives. They didn't have to help me, man. They did, man. I got a lot of heroes, man. I got a lot of mentors, a lot of heroes, man. But I don't know anybody anything for what I got, man. I earned my place right here. I deserve to be here. Thanks for letting me be a part of this process with you guys. Thanks for letting me share.